In the United Kingdom found that one in seven middle-aged couples keeps their earnings secret from each other. The survey also revealed that in some cases, one or other partner has admitted to secretly setting aside money in case of divorce or having a secret stash of cash. Some respondents even said they lied to their partner about their real salary, and all this basically shows that money and love are not always easy bedfellows. Sinead Ryan is a finance journalist, and she's here now with some tips on how better to manage the cash in a relationship. Tell me about the pantomime that you... No, you can tell me about that later. Okay, all right. Where was I? Yes. What tends to be the big pressure, Sinead? The main pressure point, if you like, when it comes to couples and finance.
Morning, Dave. The big pressure when it comes to couples. And by the way, it was long the preserve of the Irish housewife to have her running away money. You know, at the back of the wardrobe and
really?
And fair play to her. Yeah, well, you know,
the running away
girl.
Money.
A girl can't be too careful. The biggest pressure when it comes to family finances and couples is where you have a mismatch between savers and spenders. So if you have a spender married to a saver, you're going to have problems pretty much from the word go. So the best thing is to try and work out, you know, which you are. And if you know which you are, because the people who are worst at this are the people who think they're a saver when in fact they're a spender. So here's the test. Here's the question I'm going to ask you. If you got a small windfall, you know, like something back from the tax man or a bonus in work, nothing that's going to now change your life, but something moderate, what would your instinct be with that money? So, Dave, what would your instinct be with that money? New shirts?
No, I'm going to have to own up here. I just hand it to the wife. I hate money. Okay. I just give everything away, you know?
All right, okay.
Sorry, I'm like,
so,
she can deal with it.
If your instinct, well, it seems to me in that case you kind of got a lick there. So if your instinct is to kind of say, well, great, we can go out shopping or let's take a weekend away or something like that, or is your instinct, that'll be very, very handy at Christmas time, let's put it by, or the Visa card bill needs paying, let's
do that.
That's
probably what I should say.
You know, and most people know what they should do and then they do something entirely different. So you're going to have a problem where you've one couple saying, oh, we'll definitely put that away now, we'll need that next year for school fees or something. And then the other person is going, oh, sure, feck it, we'll just go on holiday or we'll buy a new dress.
Hold on, while I might hand it away, I presume the best advice is you two, you all have to talk about
it.
The
communication is going to be the best thing. And, you know, people, when it comes to finance, I have to say women are kind of bad at this. They kind of maybe make all the household decisions, you know, where to do the family shop or, you know, how to spend money or how to pay the utility bills. And then very often leave it up to their spouse to kind of look at the investment side of things. You know, what should we do for the longer term savings? And it's really, really important. Where you're married, your assets and liabilities all belong to each other. So you don't just get the nice bits, you have to do the responsible bits as well. And talking about it all the time is important. Look, you don't have to make it a big, long, depressing exercise. I mean, most families are juggling bills one way or another these days. But it's really just been about open. And also, I'm very, very strong in involving kids in these conversations. Too often we try to shield our kids from money discussions. Yeah. We think, you shouldn't have to think about this now. You shouldn't be worrying about the water taxes or the property thing. But I find kids are incredibly clear about these things. They're very adaptable. And if they understand what's going on, they can be fantastic help, actually, to family finance.
Yeah, but when it doesn't work, when they leave every light on in the house, when they have four-hour showers, especially today, like, why bother them with this stuff here?
Yeah.
Surely they don't get the basics.
Well, whatever about bothering them, you could start charging them.
Well,
so that would be
true.
A good
place
to start. A little money box outside the shower room can be a good idea.
Should bills still, though, be split equally between partners, even if one earns less than the other?
Well, I've a view on this, and it is that I'm in favour of a household having an account for bills.
Yeah.
Right. So setting up an account that just goes to pay the bills, and each of you contribute to it in a prorate way. So obviously, if somebody's earning 50,000 and the other person's only earning 20,000, you know, it should be a ratio thing. But I like the idea of all household bills paid out of one account, because there's a control mechanism there, and you're not going to go short. Or at least when you do, you can both see what's going on there. If it's up to one person to pay all the bills and something goes wrong, you know, it could be that person gets very stressed out and very depressed over it, and then you have to have a whole different conversation. If you're really bad at doing that, by the way, and some people are because they're just not good at managing accounts, you can go into your credit union and get a budget share plan, and some of them do it for free. Some of them charge €6 a month and they'll do it all for you. So you go in and say, this is what I spend on my phone, on my electricity, on my gas, on my everything. And they pay all the bills, and a portion of your salary wages goes out every single week or month. month into that account, and you don't have to think about it. If there's money left over at the end of the year, you get it back, but they structure it in such a way that there generally won't be. Both the utility companies, all the gas companies and electricity companies, offer a similar monthly payment structure. I've never understood why utilities are paid every 2 months. They should be able to be paid every month. So a lot of them can structure that, and I have that on both my gas and electricity, and it's super, because that means you're paying the same in summer as you are in winter, rather than having those massive bills just after Christmas when you've had the heating on the whole time, you're doing more, you know, more cooking, you're using more energy. So you have it evened out over the year. And you can just ask them to do that. It's free of charge. And they charge a little bit extra in case you go over, but you get it back at the end of the year if you've overpaid.
Okay, they're good. Like, they're the solutions, if you like. That's what people should be doing, and that's what's available for people to be able to do and to draw from. But looking at the thing itself, why does it happen that some people might hide in some ways? Is it driven by fear and lack of trust? Or is money a power thing in a relationship, and that maybe defines why people do what they do?
It could be either of those things. If it's driven by fear, it's generally because people have a communication problem, you know, and they're afraid to sit down and say, look, I spent this money, my Visa card is maxed out, and I forgot to tell you. But of course, facing up to it is always going to be better than hoping that it'll all go away at some point in the future and you win the lotto on Saturday. So it is better. If it's driven by power, I think that's far more insidious. Yeah. So that's a control issue, and that's financial abuse.
Is it easier than ever to lead a double life, if you like, thanks to online access and paperless statements, if you like? Like, technology is playing a huge role in, allowing double dealing, and then again uncovering double dealing, of course, as well.
Absolutely. Well, in one sense, it's never been harder to open up a bank account, because the very tight money laundering restrictions we have mean that you have to disclose everything to the banks. But it's very, very easy to hide it from your spouse if that was your intention.
But aren't an awful lot of divorce case things, especially in America, like the amount of people that just don't disclose and think they can get away with it?
That's right, and think they can get away with it. And if you've couples who are separating or divorcing, that's the first thing that a lot of them don't realise they have to supply, which is an affidavit of means, which is, here is all the money I have. And it can only be then sometimes that money kind of surfaces that people didn't realise the other person had or wasn't aware about. So isn't great that you need to kind of tie all that stuff off before it becomes a problem issue.
Yeah.
But if you have a spouse that's hiding money from you, that is putting it into a bank account, you know, I would view that very, very seriously, unless they're doing it for a surprise birthday party for you.
Unless they're doing it for a surprise divorce.
Well, this is the thing. So, you know, I would put that right up there with other forms of spousal abuse, and it really is.
I would say a lot of people do hide money for good things. For, like, I'm not going to tell her I won 50 grand on the lotto or something like that.
Well, if you're a natural saver, so if you're somebody who's cautious with your money, you look after it and you take care of it, the last thing you want is a spouse who is very spendthrift, having access to your account through an ATM card and just stripping it out to buy, you know, new clothes or, you know, stuff that they want. So it's not that it's a bad idea to do it. I just think it's a bad idea to keep it secret. I'm all in favour of separate accounts for all kinds of things, and indeed for couples. I've never, ever had a joint account with anyone.
Really?
No. And I think it's a very good idea to have separate accounts. If you earn your own money. Now, obviously, if you have a one income family, that's not, you know, that shouldn't be an option. But I'm not a big believer in everybody merging all their money together, because you so rarely get a couple that think the same way about money. It's automatically going to cause strife.
Really? Mm. So rarely? Like, you put it into percentage of maybe less than 10% or something?
Yeah, well, what you do is
you have 85%.
You have types of accounts. So if you have one joint account for household bills, fantastic. Can't go wrong with that. Everybody contributes to it and the bills are paid. Mm. Now, beyond that, if you're earning your own money as a man or a woman, arguably that's your money. And you should be allowed to do it what you will. And if you're somebody who just likes getting their hair done every week, and you're married to somebody who cannot understand how that's the case and goes up to the bathroom with the scissors and chops his own, you know, it should be okay that she gets to do that if that's what she wants to do, all things being equal.
Okay, but one of the bases surely is an insecurity thing. It's just a general thing that a lot of people would have. Couples being good, bad or indifferent to each other, whatever. Let's just say they're all good. Insecurity, fear of being poor. Doesn't that turn people into misers? And that leads to all sorts of problems.
It can go the other way, Dave. Actually, it can turn people into saying, you know, what the hell, it's all going to fall apart tomorrow, let's spend money I don't have. And the problem is that when you go from spending your own money to spending a bank's money, you're going to get into serious trouble with it.
There's a million examples of that, all right.
There are.
Absolutely, yeah, okay. What about, like, the idea, like, would you have a rule? I mean, the divorce thing, to get back to that again, that you should really think financially, not emotionally, because most people don't really get there with the finances, and they don't think about it.
Well, if you're going through a very, you know, a difficult separation or divorce, and they all are very emotional. The last thing you want is for money to come front and centre, because your children should be front and centre at all times. And once money gets into the mix, and it's very often, especially when you've been through a recession or an economic crisis as we have, those issues rise to the top of the pile, where before, when people had money, it didn't really matter and they could concentrate on other things in the relationship. But the minute money is up front and centre, those differences between people really come to the fore. Yeah. So the people who really are kind of hoarders and savers and let's mind it and I'm afraid about spending and I don't want to be flahoolock with it. And then you have another person saying, Asher, you know, what does it matter? Well, you have to live a little. Let's go on holiday. You're really, really going to have issues with that. And certainly in a divorce or separation issue, that is only going to be highlighted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, let's stay with that for a second, because I'm kind of just like, what can you do? I'm in the private eye investigation part of all of this, if there is such a thing. I mean, like, you know, would you, if you didn't want to go to attorneys, sorry, if the lawyers were not to be called in, say, by somebody, does that mean you suspect, if your husband said, don't call in the lawyers, you go, what's he trying to do? What's he trying to hide? You know, like, if there was unusual business expenses, or if you dig through the garbage, or if you checked out smartphones, or see what he's done, put a thing on his computer, and you can find out everything in an instant and all that. Have you ever come across people who've done that?
Well, it's a bit like the thing about trying to, you know, work out if you've got a drinking problem. If you think you do, it's probably too late. So if you are going to the resort of trying to hack into your spouse's bank account or check through their pockets for receipts or, you know, look at what they're spending or get the Visa card statement as it lands on the mat and steam it open.
Exactly.
You probably have bigger problems than what you're going to find within there.
I'm just thinking in terms of Hollywood movie here. Like, I mean, the smartphone GPS tools and all that to check sneaky withdrawals from ATM machines and that, you know, you don't come across that, damn.
People have it. I think people absolutely do come across it all the time. The bigger question is, what do they do about it? And if you are going to uncover, your spouse spending money that you weren't expecting, and very often it's through credit card statements, because of course we don't see them for 6 weeks after the spend, and you're seeing, you know, shops in Paris for, you know, dinners out and that kind of thing. You haven't been to Paris in 10 years, you're going to know possibly that something's up, you know. So certainly one of the ways to it is to, I would always just be in favour of a totally open communication from the very
start. By the way, just on that, don't forget the hard drive situation. I mean, like, it's etched in there. So, like, you know, everything you think you might, whatever, be hiding is all there. Just as a matter of interest, if that was taken out or if the wife found that, so I'm still on this private eye bit, rather than go
through... You sound worried, Dave. If you're going to just hand your money to your wife, I think you're okay.
Go through the dustbins. Would that be admissible in court? Just as a matter of interest. Sorry, I'm staying with movies.
No idea.
Okay.
I'm not a lawyer, but I suspect if I was the errant against wife, I would be bringing up everything I possibly
currently
could.
Currently writing a screenplay for a movie.
Carting the hard drive in and giving it to the judge.
Okay, so the joint account thing you wouldn't necessarily go with. But I mean, like, basically, if you think somebody in your relationship is hiding spending or hiding the money they're making in that, what should they actually do? Where should they go with this?
Well, I think it depends.
Confront the other person.
Confront them, yeah. And I think it really depends on what the purpose of it is. So if somebody has a plausible enough story, like, you know, well, it was for something specific, or, you know, you could have couples saying, well, look, you're really so bad at this kind of thing. I thought I'd set aside a couple of hundred quid every month to put away for the kids' education or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's probably going to be a lot more reasonable than, you know, somebody salting it away, because I think in 2 years I'm going to need a stash to get out of here, you know. So I think definitely confronting them, but also then using that as an opportunity, a springboard for an actual conversation about money and budgeting. Why did you feel the need to do that?
Yeah.
What was the thinking behind that? Do you not trust me? Do you not trust yourself? You know, was there some big element here that we're missing? And it can be a good opportunity to sit down and say, well, how are we going to do things differently now? Very few people have the money to be splashing around on things that they don't absolutely need to buy now. There's very little disposable income out there.
Wanted, like, there's a thing in The Independent this morning here, not related, but I'm just going to try and relate the two. Catherine McGuinness is writing, and she's talking about wills and things. As a nation, we are not very good at planning for the future, and more specifically for death. Most young people, perhaps understandably, avoid thinking about death at all. Those in middle age have a tendency to ignore it. One of the most telling signs that this is the incredibly low proportion of Irish people who have made a will. And they go into recent research, My Legacy, a coalition of over 80 Irish charities, found that just one third of Irish people have completed this most practical of tasks. Now, on that, almost on that level too, having a financial plan, it doesn't really sound very romantic. It's not something people necessarily want to do. And just remember, you know, that, like, if a lot of couples, and the two people in the couple are in the relationship, are not very money-minded at all, and are not accountants and such, like, you know, to hell with it. You have to do it.
Look, you don't need to be an accountant. You don't even need to be a professional at this. What you need to do is have a mutual understanding that bills have to be paid. Here's what's coming in, here's what's going out. It's Dickensian. So you sit down and you do up some kind of a sense of a picture in time and see what's there. I like to do this in three ways: a weekly spend, monthly spend, and an annual spend. And look, the weekly stuff you all know because you're doing it every week. So you're buying your groceries, all right? You're giving your kids pocket money, you're paying bus fares. So that's really easy stuff to know and jot down. And you would have a very good sense in your head because you're doing it so often how much that is. The monthly stuff is usually on direct debit, utility bills, gym membership, all that kind of stuff. So that, again, that's very straightforward to at least find out, even if you don't know off the top of the head, how much does my life insurance cost, how much is the phone bill. Where people come a cropper in families time and time and again, I've seen this with people I've done budget plans for, is the annual expenditures that they don't think about. So things like the bin charges, you know, the property tax, back to school expenses, Christmas, you know, all this stuff is coming up, and then you tend to get into a mad panic when it suddenly lands.
So hold on, if people don't have you, in your view or in your experience, if they don't necessarily plan properly for that, well, the one they do plan for the future is when a baby comes along. And should you reassess your financial arrangements then?
Well, a baby is going to be the most expensive decision you ever make, okay? Even more than your mortgage in many cases, because kids are expensive. And very often when you've kind of newlyweds or people having their baby for the first time, they don't think beyond the cots and the nappies and the clothes. You know, without realising you've a 20 or 25 year commitment here, sometimes longer, and it is worth planning for. So lots of things come into play. The first is, as Catherine said in her article, wills and insurance and things that you kind of thought, well, that's ages away. I don't have to think about that kind of stuff now. But I'll give you an example. A huge number of people in Ireland die what's called intestate. That's without ever having made a will, okay? And while there are rules about that and judges and laws and you know, where that money can be divvied out, the problem is, do you really want a judge who has never met you or your family deciding who gets that money in a cold, dispassionate way? You might have a ring that your granny left you that isn't worth much, so you think it's not worth putting in a will. It's not worth anything. But you might want your daughter to get it, or a niece to get it, or a godchild or something. That's what a will is for. And a will is not very expensive. I'll give you a figure, right? There's a fund that the government run called the Dormant Accounts Fund, right? This is money that is forgotten about in post office savings account, deposit accounts, you know, in life insurance policies.
Forgotten about it after somebody dies?
Well, either somebody has forgotten they took it out, they're still alive, they just completely forgot about it. The insurance
Prize bond's a big one there.
Massive, massive, huge. That fund currently has 119 million euros in it. 119 million euros sitting there, unclaimed by people. It's bigger than the lotto fund. And you know, and the reason is largely because A, people took out something or took out a savings account and told nobody about it. There's your hidden money.
I do that.
There's your hidden money. So if you're not going to tell somebody and something, you know, happens or befalls you, or, you know, God forbid, you know, you have an accident or worse, that money will never... I mean, what was the point of opening that account in the first place? 119 million. And it is dispersed after 15 years of being, unclaimed.
Really?
It is given away. And the government use it for good causes and, you know, sports field and, you know, a bit like the lotto funds.
I see.
Now, you're always entitled to come and ask for it back. Mm. But you have to know it's there. And life insurance companies and banks go to great lengths, because they have to by law, to find out who the hell owns
it. Oh, I thought you were going to say to hide it. I was waiting for the end of that.
Story.
Thought it was a punchline.
They go to great lengths because they don't want this. It's a liability on their balance sheets. They want it kind of owned by somebody. And it's an extraordinary amount of money. And that fund was set up about 15 years ago. Precisely.
Is that D-O-R-M-A-N-T?
So if you're going to hide your money, at least tell somebody or put it on a piece of paper somewhere where it can
be found. Okay, just one last one I want to ask you here. It's at 51552. Can a mortgage company affiliated to your bank access a bank account to view your transactions?
Yes, they can. And I'm generally a big advocate of not paying your mortgage from your current account in the same bank. Because you know, banks can access, they can dip into other accounts. If you're in a mortgage arrears, the bank's duty is to collect that mortgage payment no matter what. First and foremost, it collects its debts, and it will always seek to do that. Now, the long way of doing that is to write you solicitor's letters, take you to court, repossess your house, all that kind of thing. That takes ages and ages and ages. The really quick way is to look at your current account and say, oh, there's the money, and swipe it out. So, you know, if you feel that's going to be an issue, of course, getting into mortgage arrears isn't a good thing in the first place. But a belt and braces approach is to make it harder for the bank to do that. And this is why I favour different accounts. So you have an account for your household bills, an account for your mortgage. These are all deposit savings accounts for short-term things like next summer as holiday, longer-term things like changing the car, even longer-term things like retirement. Do not lump all that money together. I have five separate accounts I run. That doesn't make me some kind of an oligarch. There's hardly any money in any of them. But the point about it is, if I'm going to take money from the saving up to change my car in 2 years account and use it to buy a new dress, I will think twice about how badly I want that.
Wow.
And if you name those accounts, online banking is fantastic because it allows you to name those accounts. So I name my accounts, what they're for. The car account. Now, that's psychologically going to make me stop and think, how badly do I want X, Y, Z?
So not the mortgage account, not the mortgage in a current account in the same bank is good.
It just makes it harder for the bank to have to come and get that money.
And
but
you should
they
always
will
make
get
it harder
it.
For the bank.
They
should
will
you?
Get it.
All right, okay. Listen, look, Sinead, thank you very much for talking to us. Sinead Ryan, it is, finance journalist and that. And you don't want to talk about Moulin Rouge or anything.
I don't want to talk about that.
Okay, fair enough.
That's December.
All right, okay, that's December. All right, okay. I'll go for a break and see what happens. Thanks.